It was about, I think about, be about 3,400 years ago, a little bit more than that maybe. There was a man that walked on this earth, or that was on this earth, that here, and he was around the people of God, but he wasn't a part of the people of God. I'm not exactly sure what condition his heart was, really what was going on there. I'm not exactly sure. He seemed to have a certain fear of God, and God actually spoke to him and spoke through him and so forth. But he also, the story in the Bible, what we have of him, as well as what it speaks of him in the New Testament, it seems like he didn't make a clear, distinct commitment to following the Lord all the way. I'm not exactly sure what all was going on, but the Bible actually warns us about him and about his doctrine and about the way that he went. And some of you your minds may be already connecting the dots. But the man's name was Balaam. It talks about him in some places that he would prophesy. He would. It also talks about him being a soothsayer, and so forth. And a soothsayer basically is a foreteller, somebody that undertakes to. Takes a notion to foretell future events without any inspiration, just, you know, kind of his own, I don't know, just his own assumptions is what I would say. It could be also possibly, I'm not exactly sure, it could also be into the divining type of things possibly, but specifically just kind of seemed to foretell on things, and the kings in the area recognized him as having some wisdom, having some understanding that most people don't have, and he had a certain fear of God. let's turn our Bibles to, let's actually turn to 2 Peter. First of all, 2 Peter chapter 2, it speaks about him here a little bit. There's three places in the New Testament, and hopefully I'll be able to read all three places, at least the verse that speaks about him. And we would like to, I'd like to look at the life of Balaam. The title of my message is The Way of Balaam. The way of Balaam, and that's taken out of 2 Peter here, is where it uses that term as well. some reason the markers aren't up here, but that's fine. I thought I'd draw a little path, and so you can just do that on your notes here. I was picturing in my mind, there's a path. There's a way that the Bible talks about. There's a way that he took. And also talks in another place where it says the doctrine. It also talks about the error of Balaam. Those are the three different types or the three different phrases that the New Testament speaks of Balaam. So clearly in the end, New Testament conclusion of Balaam's life is not good. That's the conclusion that we see in Balaam. And he caused Israel, thank you, brother, he caused Israel to sin with some of the influence that he had there upon Israel. Maybe before I go on, let's just read there in 2 Peter. That's in 2 Peter, I believe it will start in verse 9 and go down through 19. It says there, the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptation, out of temptations, and to reserve the just, the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. but chiefly them that walk after the flesh, in the lust of uncleanness, and despise government. Presumptuous are they, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignities, whereas angels, which are greater in power and might, bring not railing accusation against them before the Lord. But these, it's talking about these people, the unrighteous, these, as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they understand not, and shall utterly perish in their own destruction, or in their own corruption, and shall receive the reward of unrighteousness, as they that count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Spots are they, and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings while they feast with you. In other words, they were right among the people of God. And this is in the New Testament, the Second Peter here. They were among the people of God. Spots they are in verse 13 there at the end. They are, and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings while they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls and heart they have exercised with covetous practices, cursed children, which have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, but was rebuked for his iniquity, the dumb ass speaking with man's voice forbade the madness of the prophet. These are wells without water, clouds that are carried with a tempest, to whom the mist of darkness is reserved forever. And when they speak great swelling words of vanity, they allure through the lust of the flesh, through much wantonness, those that were clean escape from them who live in error. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are the servants of corruption, for whom a man is overcome, of the same he is brought in bondage. So Balaam, the Bible teaches us or warns us that they, or speaks about the way of Balaam. It says in verse 15, it says, they have forsaken the right way and they've gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved righteousness and who loved the wages of unrighteousness. So the way of Balaam here, I'm just going to put the title up here. Okay. So here we have a way, a path. A road, whatever you want to call it. From what I gather, if you read some of the passages that it speaks of, now I don't know that we're going to specifically, and I don't think of just one specific verse when I think of it, but the end of that path that he took there, we'll look at that some more, but was destruction. I can use my write small enough and yet not lose my marker here. So destruction, we can also, another one would be hell, of course. But destruction even in this life, sorrow, a lot of other things that you can add there at the bottom. But these people in 2 Peter here, it talks about that they were following the way of Balaam. And I think very specifically, he points out a few of those things. He's also speaking of some other things that they had done as well. there in 2 Peter, I think that that has a fairly broad description, but very specifically here he says, or the thing that I would like to focus on here is the part that he loved the wages of unrighteousness. And some of the wages of unrighteousness in Jude, I'm just going to read the one verse in Jude there. It gives a little bit the same picture. If you turn to Jude chapter, well, it just has one chapter there. In verse 11, he talks about that woe unto them, and it's talking about a similar group of people again. Woe unto them, verse 11, for they have gone the way of Cain and ran greedily after the heir of Balaam for reward. And Perishing the gainsaying of Kore. Having run greedily after the heir of Balaam for reward, I'd like to for us just in a point to remember is a lesson I think that we can get from Balaam's life is he had a greedy heart. He had a greedy heart. So this is part of the way that Balaam took. That seems very obvious. He had a greedy heart. I'm not going to read the whole passage because it's several chapters long. If you turn to Numbers chapter 22, I was blessed and read and also listened to the chapter twice, two or three times, just to familiarize myself with it. But it's actually a strange story in one sense. In one sense, it seems to be he's actually a godly person, and you know the world around him is looking at him as a possible, as a possible connection to God. You know, and things that that I think of. How does the world look at us? You know, are we just a possible connection to God for them? But their ultimate goal is not to change their life. Their ultimate goal is not to change and be more godlike and be more Christlike. But they want the benefits of Christianity or the benefits of pleasing God or the benefits of having God on their side. That's what they want. And somehow Balaam had a greedy heart and they connected with that. Somehow I don't know if they realized what a greedy heart he had, but somehow he had issues where the world was was connected in his heart there. He had a greedy heart. I'm just going to paraphrase some of this because of the, I don't want to take all the time that it would take to read the chapter. In chapter 22, it gives the story where these servants came in the first part, the very beginning there. Before the servants came, the Moabites, they saw all the children of Israel. So this is the picture that happened, or the backdrop behind all this. The children of Israel were going through the wilderness, and the Lord was just miraculously working and moving, and great things were happening among them, and the fear of God came upon the people around them. I mean, they killed people. Anybody that opposed them, they would destroy. There was, I think it was just before this, they had asked for permission to go through the land of one of the countries there. It was a couple days ago that I read that part, but they had asked for permission, and the country where they had asked, they refused, and then they went around the bottom side and decided to get around, there was several of those occasions that happened, and one of those kings ended up coming against them, and God destroyed that king. God brought judgment on that king. Well, Moab is seeing all these things happening. Does anybody know who the Moabites were? Who were the Moabites? I thought there was some connection there, but I had to look it up myself. So I don't feel bad if you don't know right off. You have an idea? Yeah, they were descendants of Lot. That's right. They were actually, it was, and you know what happened there? If you remember back in when Lot, Abraham and Lot parted their way, Lot went to Sodom, and then he lost his family, most of his family there. His wife and his daughters were the only ones that left with him. And then his wife turned back and she died because she looked back at the city there. So Lot was left with two daughters. That's all he had. And if you look back at that story, the one of the girls, actually both of the girls, had a boy by Lot. They got Lot drunk and had a child by Lot, their father. So that's where these Moabites came from. They were descendants of that, which would be actually in a relative or a relation. If you go back to Abraham, they would be. Lot was Abraham's nephew, and so they were of the same Freundschaft, the same relative, same family tree, so to speak. So there was a connection there for the Moabites, but the Moabites at this point, they perhaps had a little bit of a fear of God, a little bit of a knowledge of God, but they were no longer following God. Something had happened there, which I'm not quite sure, even with Lot's life and so forth, where all that was. But there was a connection, and they saw that the children of Israel, everything, when they were following God, when they were listening to God, everything that God told them to do, they did it. There was absolutely nothing stopping them. Everything was success. Everything was success. And anybody that defied the children of Israel, that stood up against the children of Israel, it didn't matter if it was many or few, God defeated them for the children of Israel. When the children of Israel were walking with the Lord the way they were most of the time, I mean, they were murmuring a couple times, but as far as any time an enemy came up to this point, pretty much, it was defeat for the enemy. So the Moabites saw all this, and this brought worry. They were concerned. The king, Balak, which was king right there at that point, he sent to the Midianites, which were around it, to the other elders of the Midian there, and asked them to, and told them, hey, you know, in verse 4, it says, and Moab said unto the elders of Midian, now shall this company lick up all that are round about us as an ox licketh up the grass of the field. And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of the Moabites at the time. Anyway, and he ended up sending messengers to Balaam. So this was extremely scary, extremely unnerving to Balak and to the children of Moab there. So he sent messengers, and just to in brief, he said, hey, Balaam, he would somehow recognize that Balaam was a prophet or had connection with God. He said, hey, I want you to curse these people. I want you to go ahead and curse these people. These people are dangerous. I'm scared of them. I want you to curse them. Something that I don't understand. Of course, it's not written there, but I guess just what I think of when, as I studied or as I looked into this and just thinking about it, surely Balaam heard of all these stories too. That God was with these people. What was he thinking by asking God to curse these people? If God is with them and is blessing them, do you think, can you imagine, how would God curse them? You know, it seems to me like he wasn't thinking beyond just what he wanted to get out of this. But so they had offered all kinds of riches, all kinds of wealth. And Balaam said, hey, look, I don't care what you say. It seemed like at that point he had a fairly clear mind, and he said, you know what? I don't care what you say. God, what God speaks to me tonight, that's what I'm going to do. If you give me whatever you want to give me, I don't care. I'm not going to take it. If God tells me to not curse them, I won't curse them. I will just bless them. And so he got up the next, or he went to bed at night. God met him, and he said, what are these people doing here? What are these people doing here sleeping at your house? And he said, well, they came and they wanted to have me curse these people. And God said, you're not going to do that. You need to go and you bless them. You can't go with those. You can't go with those people. Those people that came, you can't go with them. You're not allowed to go. So actually, he didn't tell them to bless them the first time. He just said, you can't do that. And so he told the people, no, I can't do that. And they turned around and went back. But they weren't satisfied with that. And they came back again. So they had offered this. And I don't know what was going on in Balaam's mind. Here's a second opportunity. Why didn't he just simply tell them, I told you what God said. God told me I'm not allowed to go. Just get out of here. Just leave. But for some reason he said, hey, just wait. Let me see what God says again. Maybe God changed his mind. There's another time that I think of, I think King David did a little bit similar one time, but it was with a different heart. I pondered on this. What was wrong with Balaam? Was there anything wrong with him asking the second time? How many, I won't make you raise your hand, but how many of you have asked God the second time about something? I have. I've asked many times. How many of you, which maybe we haven't heard a clear yes or no, maybe that's why, but sometimes it seems like the door is closed and the answer is no, but we ask again. Now, I think there's the one lesson that I think we can, or one difference I see in Balaam's heart and I see in David's heart, King David's heart. Balaam, he asked not because he really wanted to please God, not because he wanted to bless the people of God. It was because maybe God would let him have another little avenue, another little way that he could get those riches. It seems like it. Because of what the scriptures talks about, the greediness of Balaam, and because of it talking about loving the wages of unrighteousness, is why I come to that conclusion. That something was in his heart was wrong, that he was pursuing those riches. He was pursuing them. That was his goal. He didn't really care God bless the children of Israel or not. That didn't really seem to matter. He wanted those riches. He wanted those things. So when we ask God, are we pushing it because we would like to please ourselves? Are we pushing that? If we are, I think we're beginning down the road where Balaam walked. If we're praying, we're seeking the Lord about this thing, it might be an honest, a good question, but where is our heart? Are we greedy about either? It could be a lustful thing. It could be a lusting, well, all kinds of areas of lust. Lusting after wages, after money, after greed, some of those things. Or it could be just simply pleasures of the flesh, fun things that we enjoy, things our point Just our ego, the things I want, the desires of the flesh, all those things. If that is the motive why we are seeking the Lord and seeking an answer, we will probably find ourselves on the way like Balaam. The second point, so the first point was what we see in Balaam's, in the way of Balaam, is a greedy heart. The second point is, it seems to be he was seeking God's approval. For wrong desires. He was seeking God's approval for wrong desires, it seems like. Those are some of the points that I, just in pondering Balaam's life. And the reason I chose this message is because those three times that it speaks about that in the New Testament, warning about the way of Balaam, warning about the error of Balaam, warning about the doctrine of Balaam. And I was like, okay, what lessons can we learn from Balaam that we don't do the same thing that Balaam did? And the first point, like I mentioned before, he apparently had a greedy heart. He apparently was desiring something more than he should have. He was desiring something for pleasure, desiring something. It's not wrong for us to desire things, but if that is the controlling thing in our heart, if that's really what controls us. And then he was seeking God's approval for the wrong desires. To fulfill that, to get that greed, to get that thing that he was desiring after, he was seeking God's stamp of approval. He was seeking that, and where I get that from is on down. If you go on down the path where he went, which I think there's many other lessons perhaps we can pull from. I'm just going to point out three key elements that I'd like to focus on. There's other things that are there as well, but if we go there, where the second time when he came to God. God said, okay, you can go, but you only speak the words that I give you to speak. The thing that was very, very interesting, the next morning when he got up, this is where I don't understand what all was going on. Why did God even say go? Why didn't he just again say no, don't do it? Why didn't he do that? Because here he tells him, go. The next thing we read about, God is standing in the path, and Balaam doesn't even know it. Balaam doesn't even know that God's standing in the path, blocking him. The donkey sees it. The ass, I guess it was an ass, I think, donkey, ass. Yeah, saddled an ass there in verse 21. The donkey, or the ass saw this angel, but Balaam didn't see it. But God, it says that the anger of the Lord was kindled against Balaam. You know that God was not happy. And yet, what was he doing? I'm obeying. God, I'm obeying what you told me to do. I'm obeying. You know? God told me to go with these people. Why would he be angry? I don't know all that happened there. I don't know. But it seems like God knew that there was... Balaam was going with evil intent. Balaam had some wrong desires. Balaam was wanting to seek to fulfill those desires. Balaam was going to plow his way as close to that edge as he possibly could. As close to that edge as he possibly could get to without getting God's full disapproval. You notice, you see what happens there when you go as close as you possibly can without disobeying God. You don't want to, you don't want to be bad, but you still want that thing. And so you go as close as you can. That's what it seems like Balaam was doing. That's the way of Balaam. He was seeking God's approval. He asked God the second time. He looks very polite, looks very spiritual, looks very God-fearing because he's seeking the Lord the second time. And God even answers him. God speaks to him at night. And he says, go. And he obeys. He obeys. And yet, moments later, God's anger is stirred up against him. what's with Balaam? Why do you get up and go? Well, God told him to do this. And he puts his angel in front of him and he stops him. Later on, he looked for God's approval that second night. And God gave him his approval in a sense and told him to go. But then when he got to Balak, and then he was standing in front of the king there, twice, two different times, when Balak told him to set, to, you know, here's the people. You see all these people out here? I want you to curse these people. He set up 7 altars, had them put sacrifices on each one of those. They did a burnt offering, all those things. I don't know if he knew the rituals that the children of Israel were asked to do or what, but it seemed like he knew a fashion, a way of worshiping God. I don't know, but so to me, that the lesson that I get from that is I think he's again trying to please God and trying to appear spiritual, trying to even, I think, comfort his own heart. Maybe I'm reading into this more than I should, but that's, if I look at the whole context of what the Bible concludes on this matter and where he was at and what he had done wrong there, I believe there was something, maybe he was thinking he was going to get more of the Word of God. The Lord revealed clearly. God did meet him there. But it all appeared spiritual. It all appeared so good. It all appeared so, he was on God's side. You know, it all appeared so. In the end, I think you will agree with me if you look at the end of where he came out at. There again, when he was building those 7 altars, twice he did that. He set up those altars. 2 times, 2 places. First time he set it up and God said, you bless these people for me. And he blessed them. And Balak heard this and he was like, what? I brought you here to curse these people. You just doing this? And I think Balak felt like he was being, it was kind of like a joke on him or whatever. And so he said, so he moved him. It reminds me of Jesus, Jesus there with the tempter. In Matthew, it talks about him going to these different places. The devil takes him to this place and takes him to that place. And he tries him here and tries him there. Same thing with Balaam. This Balak took Balaam to another view. And he's like, you know, now look at the people. Now curse the people from here, from this perspective. And so he, again, had the altars set up and he sought the Lord. And again, it was blessing. The third time he did that, that last time he didn't even bother with setting up altars. He knew that this was not going to be God's will to curse. So he didn't even bother with that. He took up a parable and just gave all kinds of blessings. And I really believe that the Spirit of God got a hold of Balaam, that all he could do was bless. But his heart was not right. Balaam, that's the thing we need to. I think, get one lesson or one piece we need to get from this. Balaam's heart was not right. He was saying all kinds of good things, all kinds of right things, and he was even prophesying of the children of Israel and the defeat of their enemies. He was doing all those things. And of course, this made Balak very upset and so forth. But there again, I believe he was doing some of these things, going through some of these rituals in hopes of getting God's approval. You know, Balaam didn't want to be bad. Balaam didn't really want to also get on the bad side of God because he maybe was fearful of the children of Israel himself. if we go to the end of Balaam's life, he was killed by the children of Israel. Balaam himself was... The last point I'd like to consider on this way of Balaam is Balaam, it seemed like there was an underlying desire, and I'm not quite sure how much of this was his desire or if it was the greedy heart that drove him there, but there was he was seeking to destroy the testimony of God's people or of God. That's what he was seeking to do was to undermine and to destroy the children of God, the children of Israel. That's what he was after. You don't read about it just a whole lot there in Numbers. It goes from Numbers 22, 23, 24, and 25. In chapter 25, it then talks about the consequences, or it doesn't talk about so much what he did to do that, to get them to that point. There's other places in the Bible that indicate that he convinced them to do these things. In chapter 25, it specifically just says what they did, what the children of Israel did. And I'd like to read a little bit of that. First of all, Balaam had a greedy heart. Balaam seemed to be seeking God's approval for the wrong desires, getting his way. And then he sought, because that didn't seem to work in one sense, he then around the bush, and didn't ask God for this one, he around the bush said, you know what? This is how you could make them weak. This is how you could destroy them. Just chum up with them. Just be friends with them. Just make friends with them and let them marry your children, your people. Let them do that. That's how you're going to destroy them. That's how you just infiltrate them. Just work with them. Just be their friends. Balaam gave Balak this counsel, and it was to the destruction of Israel for many, many years to come. That's that very destruction. It was a very good, very, very successful method of destroying God's people. He went on and he didn't want to reveal his greedy heart. He didn't want to go against God. And so because of that, he seemed to seek the approval of God on his life. He did things like praying to asking the Lord that night, the second night there again. He made big statements. Even if you give me your whole house, even if you give me a whole bunch of things, I will not speak but the words of God. That last ending, the last sentence that counsel that he gave Balak was not from God. When he told them, go and marry these people. Go and mingle with these people. He didn't bother asking God anymore. He did the righteous thing. He did the right, things that appeared good and right. So now he was still God-fearing, but then undermining underneath. You see his heart come out. He still wanted his money. He still wanted his greed. I don't think he got so much because Balak basically sent him home empty, I believe, there. But that seems to be the motivating factor. The underlying thing was the greed. The greed and his own lust and perhaps also the fear of the people of Israel was some of the underlying things. And then his heart, that was the condition of his heart. But then how he went about that condition of the heart, because his heart was not right with God, and because his heart was set on those things, is what drove him to the place. Let me start over there. Because his heart was in the condition or in the place of badly wanting that the riches and the fame. Because of that, he ended up twisting, or he was looking for a way, a loophole of how he could get that, get his hands on that, lay his hands on that, without totally destroying his relationship with God. And I believe that's what he's talking about in the New Testament when he says, these people, back in 2 Peter there where we were reading, he talks about they're presumptuous, and he talks about them speaking evil of dignities. He talks about the corruption. He talks about they receive reward for the reward of unrighteousness, and they take pleasure in people that do those things, and also spots they are and blemishes, sporting themselves and with their own deceivings and. While they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery. Again, Balaam's heart was after his own lust. How about us today? We can desire, maybe we really badly would like to, we would not want to let go of a friendship. Maybe we badly would not like to let go of a relationship that we have because it's very dear and near to our heart. Whatever those things are, maybe it's not a friendship. Maybe it's money. Maybe it's making money. Maybe it's what are those things that our hearts are lusting after or desiring after that could get in the way of our relationship with God. I again just I think of this pyramid thing, or pyramid, the triangle, I should say. This piece is so, or this example is so true in Balaam's life. He desired, he had a strong desire to fulfill his lust. Whatever that lust was, in his situation, it was actually greed for money and wealth, I believe. So that point was fulfilled in his life. And he could rationalize it. In other words, he could reason why he should have that money. He could reason with that. He could be like, you know what? There's nothing wrong for me to, you know, at least ask God so that we can, you know, so I can have this riches, so I can have my way. So when the opportunity came, which in this case, he was actually seeking God's approval. God said, go. God said, go. He jumped for it right away. If you have all three of those points in your life, whatever it may be, you will have it. This applies. If you are desiring something that, in other words, there will be sin. If all three of these points are fulfilled, you will have sin. You will commit sin. You will, there's no other way. If you desire it, you lust after it, you rationalize it, or you reason why it should be okay, or you know, whatever, and then you get an opportunity, you will sin. Balaam's life, he had a greedy heart. He was looking for God's approval. He wanted a way to go on and do it without feeling too bad about it. And then in the end, when it didn't just totally turn out the way he was hoping to, because his heart was not right with God, he still, underneath, tried to destroy the testimony of God. And I believe some of the reason for it was Balaam was afraid, probably for his own life, as well as it probably brought conviction on where he was at with God. Because the people of God were living a godly life, or were living in a relationship with God that he perhaps desired. I think the same thing can be true for us today. We maybe see a brother prospering in the Lord. We perhaps see a church prospering in the Lord. We perhaps see others that are doing well spiritually. But we don't find that in ourselves. Maybe we don't find that in ourselves. Maybe we don't find that vibrant relationship, and it causes us a bit of jealousy. Or perhaps a bit of fear of them. Maybe we're afraid. It brings conviction. And so, if we're really honest with ourselves, if that is the condition of our heart, we are, I believe, walking down the way of Balaam, where it's talking about here in the verses that we read. Talks about those that are spots and blemishes. It talks about those that are beguiling, those that are deceiving. It talks about in some of the other passages in Jude, giving themselves over to fornication, and also some of those places it talks about delighting to see others fail. And I know there was a time in my life when I was struggling. I think I maybe have shared it before, when one of my brothers was being faithful, and he was being a clear living testimony. I didn't wish bad for him. I didn't wish evil for him, but it brought comfort to me when it didn't go so well, or when I saw him perhaps failing, perhaps being weak. I think Balaam, the way of Balaam, what Balaam was telling Balak, if you can just get them to be weak, if you can just put a stumbling stone in there, it won't be so rough for you. In the end, the conviction, and I'm just putting that for us today, if we are not willing to if we struggle with going all the way with the Lord, and we're looking for, because the flesh doesn't like that. The flesh has a greedy heart. It wants to do its own thing. It wants to go that way. And so we struggle with that. And then we struggle with that brother because he's speaking into my life. And we struggle with that sister because she's being a godly influence. And God seems to really be blessing them. And then we can fall to that, the third point, where Balaam spoke into Balak's life, told him how he could be a stumbling stone for the children of Israel there, and and to make them to be weak. In conclusion, the end of Balaam, if you go to chapter 20, actually, I was going to read there a little bit in chapter 25. Let me read just a few verses of the consequences the children of Israel faced because they went the way of Balaam. They got sucked into this. And maybe just a little bit of a practical thing that we can... I'd like to just touch on a little bit just so we can connect. Maybe... I know the Lord can do this connecting in your heart, but just giving you some examples of where we can perhaps be making friends with the Moabites, so to speak. That can be who we choose to be our friends socially. Socially here, or socially with the technology that we use. Those can be ways that we can be like the children of Israel, making friends with the Moabites. And it can undermine, and it will undermine, the power of God in our life if we do that. It will undermine if we make friends with the Moabites. And the Moabites are those, they have nothing in mind but our destruction. They have nothing. They come like Balaam did, in the spirit of righteousness, in the pretense of righteousness is better said, in the pretense of righteousness, offering sacrifices, offering all these good things, even connecting with God and hearing from God some of the time. But their ultimate motive is to destroy, and to destroy the testimony of God, the clear testimony, the one that really wants to follow God with all his heart. They don't like that. They want to destroy that. You make friends with the Moabites, we will be destroyed just like they were. Take that and ponder that. In chapter 25 of Numbers there, and Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people unto the sacrifices of, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. And the people did eat and bow down to their gods. And Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them before the Lord against the sun, and the fierce anger of the Lord, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay every one his men that were joined unto Baal Peor. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So here the children of Israel are repenting. They are repenting, and probably repenting because there was many that were killed already at this point. And yet there was one that was defiant enough, defying the counsel of God and call to righteousness and repentance. He was defying that in a very blatant way. Here he brings his Midianitish woman, flaunting her, it seems like, because of, in the context that it's given here, he just brings it in her in the sight of all Israel, just like, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what they say. Whatever. That's the attitude. When God already was passing judgment on, asking that they would pass judgment on these. Anyway, Phinehas, in verse 7, and when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the children of, among the congregation, and took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through. And the man of Israel and the woman through her belly, so the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And those that died in the plague were 24,000. 24,000. You know, there was no battle. The Moabites, they didn't come and do any war. They said, hey, let's just make friends. Let's just make friends. The same thing will be true if we compromise with what's wrong in our life and we lay down where we need to stand. The same thing is true in our life. If we make friends with ungodly influences in our life, we will be like the Moabites there. The way of Balaam, it's downhill. Balaam had a greedy heart that seemed to motivate him. It seemed to control him. Balaam seemed to be seeking God's approval for wrong desires. Maybe just the prestige, maybe just the fame. In our situations, in our settings, maybe it's our social friends. Maybe it's the next dollar. You know where God is speaking to you this morning. We know where those temptations are, where those desires are there. We all have desires. We all have, our flesh fights against God all the time. Well, none of us are eradicated from those things. We just don't want to rationalize and say that it's okay for us to live in those conditions. We don't want to ever give ourselves the opportunity to fulfill those things. And so we have to take some of those things away if we want to be victorious. And in the end, so those 3 points again, a greedy heart. Balaam had a greedy heart. He seemed to be seeking God's approval for wrong desires, and he, in the end, seemed to be seeking to destroy the people of God or the testimony of God. May God help us to turn away from that. Just a closing verse yet in Revelation chapter 2. One of the churches got a lot of good to say about them, the church at Pergamos. And he said, you know, you're doing a lot of good there. And they even had a faithful martyr. But in verse 14 he says, "But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam." And I think that doctrine, that way of Balaam, was that mingling. It's all right. It's all right to mingle with ungodly desires, with fulfilling those ungodly desires, and saying it's okay. And some of that, he also says that there who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before Israel to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication. And Jesus' words here are repent. Repent. And those are still, I believe, the words that God would have us. If we find ourselves in the way of Balaam, there's still an opportunity for us to repent and turn to the Lord and to say no to those things and to commit ourselves to God. May God bless you. I hope and trust that we can learn from these words, from the error that Balaam did, and even the destruction that it brought to Israel. There was a lot of lives lost. And today, we can influence the things that... That's the thing that where it becomes a very sobering thing, is there are many people following me. There's many people following each one of you. There's many people we don't even realize. And what influence are we? We don't want to influence them the wrong way. God bless you.